Good morning. Well, this series kind of was birthed out of my six-week sabbatical time that I was able to have this summer. I was sitting around, and one of the goals that I had coming into the sabbatical, the time off, was to think about our church and to think about where we are headed as a church and how to maybe help bring a little bit more clarity and focus and direction to where we need to go and where we want to go. And so I was really wrestling with this question about identity as a church and all that. And the question I was thinking about is, what makes us us, right? What makes us Centerville Grace? Because, you know, there's so many churches that are very, very similar to ours. And so what kind of makes us distinct from everybody else? What are we going to focus on? What are we going to pursue? What are we going to be like coming, you know, moving forward? And one of the ways that I think helps bring clarity and helps bring, you know, direction to something is having a shared language. And for example, let me just kind of give you an example of this. Back in the 1800s, there was a phrase that kind of spread throughout America, and we still can say it today sometimes. We still hear it from time to time. And I'll help you fill in the blank here. It goes, remember the Titans, right? No, remember the 1800s. Remember the Alamo, right? Alamo. Suddenly, yeah, that massacre happened at the Alamo in San Antonio, Texas in the 1800s. And so suddenly now, when people started saying, remember the Alamo, that was enough. You knew exactly what they were talking about. You knew what that meant. That energized people, that inspired people, that moved people. You know, that was very, very clear. All you had to say was, remember the Alamo. And that was going to be enough for them. So they had a shared language. And there's other things that we still have today that are common language, shared language. And so I was trying to think of maybe some ideas of how I can do that, how I can create some statements, some value statements, belief statements that can be kind of become part of our shared language as we do Centerville Grace together. And so again, this is to help us, to make us distinct. But this is not to say that we're better than any other churches. And I'm not saying other churches don't believe what we are going to be talking about. But I'm just saying we are deciding that we're going to kind of draw some, in a sense, you know, some circles, some lines. Here's who we are, and put some focus, put some words to it. And maybe other churches aren't doing exactly that. So that's going to make us a little bit different. And one of the reasons I'm so excited about this series is because, as we've been talking about, this is in conjunction with our life groups this time. And we haven't done this in a while, but I'm going to be preaching on Sunday a talk, and then on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday nights, our life groups, you guys will be discussing what we talk about up here. And so even if you really don't know anything about the Bible, even if you're really not even sure what you believe yet, you will have at least a little bit of background coming into that conversation. So everyone's not starting off on a blank page. Everyone's at least has the sermon, and we have given you questions. The questions are actually out there. You can take with you this week to start looking through and thinking about, because each of these statements are so broad, and we can talk for hours and hours on each one. And so I want us to kind of all kind of focus in. But because our life groups are 12 weeks on and 1 month off, this series is going to be 12 weeks long. But take heart. They're going to be very broad in topics. We're going to cover a lot of different topics, a lot of different scriptures. Really, each of these could be their own sermon series themselves, okay? So it's not like we're going to be talking about the exact same thing every single week for 12 weeks. So just hang with me. It's going to be okay on that one. But this is, I'm just so excited that we could to do this together with our life groups. Now, one of the reasons I decided that I wanted to call this whole series This Is Us is not because of the TV show, by the way, all right? Just for the record, people are asking me, is it because of the TV show? You know, I've never seen the TV show. I heard it's good. You know, some ladies like the TV show. I don't know. But I like this series, This Is Us, the series title, because of the word us. Because of the word us. Us invokes emotion. It's an encouraging word. Us implies relationship. And the reason I know us implies relationship is because about 11, 12 years ago, I was chasing down Beth to become my girlfriend. And I finally wore her down one night just before spring break. I was headed off to Maine. She was going to Florida. And I finally got her to say that she's looking forward to pursuing, and she used the word us. And so I was all excited that, because I've been chasing her for months and months and months, and finally she called us. And so I went off to spring break up in Maine. She went down to Florida. And when I was so happy all week long. When I got back, my heart was so full. I just couldn't help myself. I wrote her this letter, this love letter. And at the end of it, I wrote these words, looking forward to pursuing us, right? Because that's the words that she used for me. And so she read the letter, and apparently she got kind of spooked by that letter. She's okay. And the next communication I get back from her was these words, there is no us. Right? And I'm like, ouch, right? That was the words you said. What are you talking about? And so you could just hear my little heart just crumble into 1,000 pieces. And that would usually drive away 99.9% of men, I think, at that point, but not this guy. This guy's persistent, right? I knew what I wanted, so I kept after. And so obviously it worked out. But we joke about this word. We joke about that phrase, there is no us, or this is us. That kind of triggers some fun things. But us, for you know, us implies relationship. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. That's how I want to kick off our series this morning, talking about relationships. Because here's what we believe as elders, as leaders of this church. Hopefully many of you believe this as well. Here's our first statement. We believe relationships are so important. Relationships are worth dying for. Relationships are so important, so valuable to us that we really believe relationships are worth dying for. And some of you might be going, wait. That sounds a little extreme. That sounds a little too over the top, hyperbolic, like, what do you mean by that kind of thing? That's over the top. Maybe for some of you, the reason why this sounds extreme to you is because we live in a culture that undervalues relationships. We live in a culture that undervalues the importance and the value of relationship. I'm telling you, we live in a culture that is so now individualized and personalized and specialized for the individual. We're not walking around with us phones or us pads, right? We're walking around with iPhones. In fact, we tried in the 80s the whole us phone thing with party lines. You guys ever remember party lines back in the 80s? These young people don't know what we're talking about. Party lines is you didn't even just share a line with your family. You shared one phone line with the neighborhood. And so if any neighbors were on the phone, you could pick up and listen, and they would know that you probably picked up and listened, but you would just say, oh, sorry, you know, kind of thing, and hang up and hope they were. That was an us line. We don't have us lines anymore. We have iPhones now. We have iLines, and that's a good thing. But overall, in our culture, in our country, we have become so kind of antisocial. With all the social media, we have become so antisocial. We become so individualized. And now we're seeing the effects of this. Now we're seeing what it's like to live in a country, in a culture where relationships are lacking in such a degree. I mean, never before have people been so disconnected. In fact, a few weeks ago, we saw an outpouring of this in Charlottesville. We've been talking about that and praying for that, right? But when you look at this picture, there's one thing that, when I was doing this series, there's one thing that stood out to me. Here are two groups of people that completely undervalue the importance of relationships. I mean, so much has been said and so much, I mean, we could talk for hours of just how awful, you know, all this was, the hate and the anger and everything. But when I looked at this, what was going on with the lens of relationship, I'm like, here's two people who they're protesting, but they don't realize they are not being heard. Because you can't do this and be heard. You can't do this and really be understood. You can't do this stuff. You know, you've lost. That's why I love what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. did and the civil rights movement and Gandhi and those kind of things. They protested in a way that kept the door open for relationships. They valued relationships. Even with the other side, even if they were against the other side or the other guy's side was against them, they said, we need to have the relationship still open for us to get any. Where? I mean, this is kind of an extreme version, but this is just undervalued or no value of relationships. You know, in the church, this is where Christians can even get off track when we undervalue relationships. A few weeks ago, too, I saw on a Twitter post, there was a waitress who was serving a couple, and this waitress had a tattoo on her on her arm here that had an LGBT symbol on it. And so when she got the check or the bill back from the couple, she saw a note on the bill. And here's what the note said. Can't tip someone who doesn't love Jesus? Bad tattoo. If you go to the next slide, you can see it. Bad tattoo. And I'm like, I mean, again, we could talk for hours on just how wrong this is on so many levels, and you know, but the thing that screamed out to me is here's a couple who undervalues or has no value for a relationship with this waitress. I mean, talk about burning bridges, and not just bridges for them, but for the church and trying to reach her. I mean, this is just awful. But this is where we live. This is where we are now because the relationships are lacking. The relationships are so undervalued. So I don't really care what you think. I can say what I want and do what I want because I don't really want a relationship. I don't really need a relationship with you. And I was looking at statistics, right? And so those are kind of extreme versions, and we say, well, we wouldn't be doing stuff like that, and I hope not. I pray not. But the reality is, I don't know if you know this, by age 25, we peak at the number of hours we spend in relationships with people like our friends at age 25. After age 25, that number begins to drastically go down. You know why at age 25? Because you have kids, right? And we know kids ruin everything, right? Everything. We love our children, we do, but our old lives, they ruin, right? But age 25, we start to have kids, life gets busy, our friendship hours begin to drastically go down. But what's interesting, when you look at the numbers and you look at the graphs, you would think maybe by the time the kids were able to watch themselves or at least out of the house, that number would start to go back up, but it never, never does. In fact, at the age of 30, there is a chart, there is a graph that the numbers just keep going up and up and up, and that is the number of hours that we will spend alone. That will never go down on general average. I'm not saying everybody, but that just never goes down. That hours just keeps going up of how much time we spend alone. In other words, the older we get, the more reluctant we become to new relationships. The older we get, and I see this on the playground. I take my kids to the playground or take my kids to the Y, and when Sam and Ethan run into the playground, there's other kids, and you know what they do? They go up to him and say, hey, my name is Sam, my name is Ethan, you know, let's play kind of thing. And it's like, oh, great, we can be friends. And then they say, your favorite color is red? Well, my favorite color is red. Now we can be best friends, you know, and that's how things work as kids. But then I notice all the adults, and I'm guilty of this too, all the adults kind of stand around the perimeter, and if you don't know anybody, you're not going to just introduce yourself to anybody. You're just going to stare at your phone or just watch your kids or whatever, but there is no desire to start new relationships. And I totally understand why. I get this. I feel this too, because relationships, we know, can be complicated. They can be difficult. They can be inconvenient. I mean, come on. And the reason that relationships can be difficult, complicated, inconvenient is because people can be difficult, complicated, and inconvenient. How many of you know difficult people? Don't look around, right? I mean, there are people that are just hard to talk to, people that are annoying, people that bore us, people that we just don't seem to have anything in common with. I mean, we just can add it on just how difficult some people are to ever connect with and build a relationship. I get this. And then as far as complicated, I mean, wasn't it so much easier, and this is not a slam on your spouse, but wasn't it so much easier before you got married to make friends and have friends, right, for many of us? Because you didn't have to worry about anybody else liking your friend but you, right? You didn't have to care what anybody else thought. It was just if you like the guy or if you like the girl, hey, fine, hang out. But then suddenly you got married or you got in a serious relationship, and now that spouse needed or that person needed to like your friend as well for you to have that kind of time with them. And then suddenly now they got married. And now it's a four-way complicated thing, right? And now your spouse has to like their spouse and you and sort of thing. And all of a sudden, it's like so much harder. And then they have kids and you have kids. And it's like, well, our kids have to like your kids have to like our kids. And then it's like your parenting style needs to be my parenting style, or there's going to be, you know, kind of thing. And it's almost to the point where the probability of you finding a family, finding kids, and finding all that you like and they like you is astronomical. You might as well just go buy a lottery ticket, right? Instead of finding all these things. And then on top of that, we are so busy. We're just so busy and our schedules are so full. And then so if you find someone, if you happen to find that lottery ticket winner where you find a family that you can hang out with and those friends and all that, and all of a sudden now it's like, well, does your calendar match up with my calendar? Because if not, I don't know how this thing ever is going to work. And so it can just be incredibly difficult. It can be complicated and it can be inconvenient trying to match up hours and times of getting things. So come on. I mean, it is so hard. No wonder. No wonder we undervalue relationships in our culture. It's tough. It's complicated. It's inconvenient. We're just in our society. That's not where we're moving towards. And so because of that, I think as a church, we cannot overvalue the importance of relationships. I can't express the importance of relationships enough to you. In fact, it's not just because of where culture is, but as Jesus followers, as you like walk with God, as you think about your faith, as you study Scripture and all that, everything always, there's like one common thread through Scripture, one of these main threads, I think maybe the thread, is the idea of relationship. In fact, Jesus was asked, and you guys know this, Jesus was asked, you know, what's the greatest commandment? Jesus, there's 613 commandments. What's the greatest commandment? He said, well, I can boil it down to two at this point. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, how is your relationship with God, and how is your relationship with other people? But it always, always, always comes back to this idea of relationships. So this morning, I'm going to look at what two people say in Scripture. One is Jesus' half-brother James. I want to look at what he has to say about relationships. And then I want to look at what Jesus himself said about relationships in light of what, you know, James had told us. Because I want to look at James first, because James, even if you're not a Christ follower this morning, this part is for you. I mean, this part, James is going to give you free counseling advice. I mean, you don't have to pay for the hour. It is free. And he explains the dynamic in relationships. And we've looked at this before in the church, but I want to look at it with a little bit of a different angle with this series. And then I want to look at what Jesus said to us as Christ followers. And so James chapter 4 is where we're going to start this morning. James chapter 4, starting in verse 1. And James so wisely explains this dynamic of relationships and why they're so difficult, why are they so complicated, why they feel like so they're so inconvenient for us. James chapter 4, starting in verse 1, says this. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? In other words, what is the source of the tension that you feel with other people? What's that thing that kind of gets in the way of you having like this really great relationship with somebody else? What is that thing that actually is pushing you away from each other rather than towards each other? What causes fights and quarrels among you? And you might be saying, well, that's easy. See, it's my in-laws. Because every time I bring up, you know, her mom or she brings up my, you know, you kind of thing, we just get into it. It just goes round and round and round. Maybe for some of you, it's finances. Every time money is brought up, I just get this sick feeling and I, you know, we just can't see eye to eye and I just end up, you know, coming back and forth. Maybe it's kids again, right? Because kids ruin everything. So maybe it's kids for you. Every time my spouse and I, if we have kids, you know, kind of thing, it's like I think I see just totally different things than what you see and it's just back and forth. And he says, yeah. Okay, on the surface, you know, those can cause fights and quarrels, but James goes deeper than that. James goes to the very heart of it all when it comes to why you have these tensions in any and all relationships. He says this, don't they come from your desires that battle within you? In other words, inside of you and inside of me, there is a war of wants. And we want people to treat us a certain way, act a certain way, say certain things. You know, we expect certain things from certain people. We want people to treat our family members a certain way. We just have all of these wants, all of these desires that end up spilling out and over onto our relationships. And when we don't get what we want and when they don't get what they want in a relationship, then he says, then there is conflict. Don't they come from the desires that battle within you? I mean, let's be honest. Some of you, you are probably in a fight with somebody right now, coming in on Sunday morning to church. You probably walked in, and you were hot, and you were trying to hide it sort of thing, and you're, you know, Why is that? Why is that? Because you aren't getting what you want. Some of you had it out with your kids on the way here. Had to get them ready, had to get them out the door, maybe if something from last night, and you are having it out with them. And the reason you are having it out with them is because you aren't getting what you want. And you might say, well, it's not that. It's for my kids. That's not what I'm just not getting what I want or with my spouse. It's what I think I deserve, what I do deserve. But isn't what you want what you deserve? So always goes back to this. You aren't getting something that you want, and because of that, there's conflict and there's something that battles within you. He goes on, he says, you want something, but you don't get it. And so what do? He says, you kill. And this is where we go, time out. I don't kill. I mean, you know, come on. Now, the reason I know he's using hyperbolic language here, because it is, because he's not writing to anyone's particular. He's not writing to even a particular church. He's just writing to basically any Christians who are going to pick up and read this thing. He's like, so this is not anyone in mind. He's saying, listen, you know and I know, when your desires go left unchecked, when you just go after what you want, no matter what it is and no matter what the cost, he says you eventually begin to kill. And you may not physically kill, although some people do, but you will certainly, if you can kill a relationship, wanting it to, I mean, you can want it to death. You can kill a marriage. You can kill a friendship by wanting it to death. And some of you know this. Some of you have done this. Some of you have done this to you. But you, he says, you want something, you don't get it. So you just go after it and you even kill to get it. Kill a relationship. So you kill, he says, and you covet, which means you just go after what you want. But you cannot have what you want. So you quarrel and you fight. Why is there so much tension? Why is there so much, you know, between back and forth, between no matter what party, you know, no matter what group of people, it's always the same thing. You're not getting what you want. And it's those desires that keep waging war inside of you that it spill out and you begin to fight and quarrel. Now, the reason that James can say this, because he doesn't know your argument. He doesn't know what you've been fighting over. He doesn't know the whole thing. He doesn't know what she did to you or he did to you, you know, kind of thing. He doesn't know any of this. But the reason he can say this with absolute authority, because he understands how normal relationships work. He understands our natural tendencies. When we go into a relationship, what we're looking for, right? I say it this way. We often get in and stay in based upon what we can get out of a relationship. Isn't this true? The whole reason we get into a relationship to begin with is what we can kind of get out of the relationship. And I'm not saying this is bad. I'm not saying that's you know, that's terrible or anything of that. I'm not making a judgment call on that. I'm just saying that's our natural tendency. I mean, even with your spouse. Come on, the reason you started dating him, started dating her, isn't so much because of how you could make them feel, because you could make a whole lot of people feel special, but really wasn't it came down to how they made you feel? How they made you feel special, how they made you feel loved and accepted and all those great things. I mean, come on. There was a selfish part of us, at least, to say, I'm in this because I'm getting something out of it. Again, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's just our natural tendency. The reason you got the job and have the job that you have and the relationship that you have with your boss or your bosses or your company is not because you walked in going, man, I think I can just contribute everything to this company. It's ultimately you chose that company because of ultimately what they could pay you, what title they could give you, what benefits they could give you. I mean, for most of us, generally speaking, isn't that true? I mean, the reason you have a relationship with the bank that you have is not because, you know, I think Fifth Third could add to my, you know, my huge bank account. It's the reason of what they could do for me. I mean, come on, isn't this just natural, true? And so he says, if that's the way we naturally enter relationships most of the time, what we can get in and stay in, you know, based on what we can get out of it, I mean, come on. He says, no wonder why you're fighting, no wonder why you're quarreling, because you're focused on what you can get out of it. And suddenly now relationships, you know, look best when they're least mutually beneficial. That's usually the win-win for us, right? You win, I win, and everything's great. And we say, yeah, but suddenly if I'm not winning, then I'm out. Or suddenly if I'm not winning, then I'm going to win. I'm going to get my thing. I'm going to fight. I'm going to quarrel. And so he says, listen, that thing inside of you, that thing inside of me that gets what we want, that desire to get what we want, that gets in the way of the relationship. That's what gets in the way of the relationship. I can say it this way. Getting our way can get in the way of a relationship. And it does so often. And so how do we get through that? How do we get past that? How do we keep in a healthy relationship and stay in a relationship? You know, James would say, listen, you got to take those desires that you want. You got to take those things, the selfish self-centeredness, the things that I got to have it my way kind of thing, and you have to kind of put those things to death. I say it this way. The only way to keep from killing any relationship, because it's our desires that kill the relationship, the only way to keep from killing the relationship is to sacrifice our own desires. To say, it's really not about me. I'm going to put my thing down, my wants down, and I'm going to deal for put your deal ahead of my deal. That's the only way relationships going to work. And you know this. Some of you have been in marriage and stay in a marriage, and the only reason you could maybe say I'm still in this marriage is because I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to sacrifice my needs, my desires, my wants. I'm going to put those things down for the sake of the other person. Some of you are in friendships right now, and the only reason you're still staying in this friendship is because that you're willing to do this. And some of you, maybe if you're honest, the only reason you're in a relationship is because the other person's willing to do this. I don't know. But if the only way that we can have and stay in a relationship is if we kill and sacrifice those desires that battle within us, because it's those desires that end up killing the relationship if left unchecked. And I think what maybe a relationship that best illustrates all this is between parents and kids, especially parents with kids who are maybe older, who are maybe more like prodigal sons and daughters who have hurt them over and over and over and over again. Maybe you are one of these parents. Maybe you know a parent like this. And you talk to them, and most of them are going to say, you know what? As much as this hurts, as painful as this is, I'm sticking in this relationship. I'm leaving the door open. I'm leaving the lines of communication open. They can go and do these things, but at the end of the day, I'm still willing to have a relationship with them. Why? Because as parents, they did not enter into the relationship. This is maybe one of the almost natural relationships where you really don't enter in the relationship expecting very much out of the relationship. Because if you're a new parent, don't expect much out of the relationship, or at least for a while, right? Because they take and take and take. But this is the only one of those relationships where it's like, I'm starting out not what I can get out of the relationship. I'm starting off of what I can put into the relationship. I mean, this is why, moms of, especially of some of the worst criminals on the planet, killers and rapists and whatever, they will continue to go see their son or daughter in prison. They will still write letters. They will still, do the phone thing with them. Why? Why do you keep going back there? And their answer, I've talked to, some of these moms and, the answer is, It's not what I can get out of the relationship. I mean, they're in jail. I mean, they can't do much, or they're not sending anything back on that. It's not what I can get out of it. It's what I can still add to it, that I see the value of the relationship. In other words, I say it this way. The value of the relationship is not what you can get out of it, but more importantly, and I think this is the mature way of looking at relationship, more importantly, it's what you can add to it. It's what you can put into it. It's what you can give to the relationship. And so in light of that, James says, the problem is it's our selfish desires, and the only way from keeping to kill any relationship is to sacrifice our own wants and to look at and approach relationships differently. It's not what I can get out of it. It's what I can add to it. Here's what Jesus says. This is Jesus' words. And let me just tell you, this is not a command. If you're not a Christ follower, we're not expecting you to do this, right? But if you are a Jesus follower, we are expecting you to do this here. And this is something we've talked about many, many times. This is why this is one of our core. This makes us us. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. He says, if you really want to know if you really want to know all my teachings, if you boil them down, if you really want to know everything Old Testament, New Testament, if you just put it all down into one idea, he says, this would be a great idea for you just to hang your hat on. He says, I want you to love one another, love each other, not the way they deserve, not so you can get something out, but I want you to love them as I have already loved you. This is why our mission statement is our mission statement. Our mission statement is leading people to Jesus by loving people like Jesus. And then what we mean by loving people like Jesus is loving people the way Jesus has already loved us. And I don't know how you do this without the context of relationship. I don't know how you can love someone and serve someone and care for someone and feed someone and accept someone and carry someone's burdens apart from the context of relationship. I mean, this is why we talk about life groups. Because in here is great on Sunday morning. Sunday morning's great, but in here are rows. And I don't know how you can really care for someone and, you know, carry each other's burdens sitting in a row. Robin this morning talked about how she couldn't even get somebody's name, you know, because they're sitting in rows. And if you just only come on Sunday morning, this is not the full church experience. This was never what Jesus had in mind as the full church experience. Sitting not in rows, but we think sitting in circles are way better because in sitting in circles, you get to see face to face, know somebody, be known, carry their burdens, they carry yours, and that way you can actually fulfill what they call in the New Testament the law of Christ. This is the law of Christ. Love each other as I have loved you. But I have no idea how we all can do this apart from relationships. And then he goes on and he gives this example. An example that he himself would demonstrate a little later on in his life. But he says this, and this is a very popular phrase that we oftentimes use in memorial services, you know, Memorial Day kind of things. But this is it. He says, greater love, this is where it comes from, greater love has no one than this. In other words, there's no better example, there's no better demonstration of how to love someone that he laid down his life for his friends, for his that if you really want the ultimate demonstration of what this means to love someone, to care for someone, the ultimate expression of saying, I'm not in this for me because I'm laying myself down. I'm in this for you and for the relationship is to lay yourself down, to lay your wants down, to lay your life down. And the amazing thing is, Jesus, as he always does, didn't just teach this. Right? Jesus was really talking about himself here. And this is the gospel. That Jesus, even though he did not need anything, comes to earth not to get something from you. But Jesus came to earth for you, to give you everything that he had. Everything that he had, everything, his status, his righteousness, everything that he had, he gives to us for you. And the good news is, he's not asking you to lay your life down physically for anyone. He's already done that. He's paid for it all. He's not saying you need to go die for anyone. But he is saying, now that I have loved you in this way, now that I have lavished my grace, my mercy, my love, everything upon you, now come on. Just love people the way I've loved you. Love people the way I have already demonstrated my love for you. And you cannot do that apart from relationships. You cannot do that sitting in a row. You cannot do that sitting in the sideline. You cannot do that on a Facebook post. You can't do those things. I love what Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook guy. You know what he said lately? He says, basically, and I'm not quoting him, but paraphrasing him. He was saying how we are relationally becoming more and more disconnected as a society, and Facebook can fill in that gap. Facebook can replace the churches that once people went to. You know why he thinks he can say those things? Because he has no idea what relationships ought to really look like in the church and supposed to really look like and can really look like in the church. He would, you know, I think he would be so embarrassed if he understood what real relationships ought to look like and can look like in a church. This is why, and this is what we mean when we say relationships are worth dying for. Because there's a thing in you and a thing in me that if it rears its ugly head, that selfishness, that self-centeredness, I'm telling you, is going to kill a relationship every single time left unchecked. And the only thing that we can do, we can't control the other person, but the only thing that we can do is to sacrifice our own desires, to sacrifice our wants. Not just so that we can get something out of the relationship, but more importantly, for the sake of what we can add to the relationship. And I know I'm approaching you not from a consumer-based point of this morning, right? I could talk about life groups, I could talk about relationships, of everything that you yourself could get out of it. But I'm talking to you, hopefully, as you understand, as people who are trusting in Jesus, following Jesus. I'm talking to you Christ followers this right now. I'm telling you, it's not what you can get that's important as much as it is what you can give to a relationship that makes relationships worth dying for. And when you finally see the difference, I'm telling you, that changes everything when you look at people. I'm finally starting to get this. I'm 36 years old, and I'm finally beginning to realize, yeah, that person might have a little bit of annoying laughter, or yeah, that person's a little bit harder to, you know, take, or yeah, I'm having a harder time getting through to that person, and my schedule's not really, I got to flex my schedule way more than that person's flexing theirs, but it's worth it. Not because of what I can get out of it. I already got everything I need. You already got everything you need. You may not realize that as Christ followers. You got everything out. And I'm not saying we don't get anything out of it, but I'm saying more importantly, it's what we can put into it. So this is why we preach and teach and talk about and direct and everything we can do to get you into a life group. Because our life groups are designed to make things as easy as possible. Easy on-ramps, easy off-ramps. 12 weeks on, 1 month off. We set the times, we set the places, we get even the discussion questions there. I mean, everything is we try to make this as easy and as less complicated and as convenient as possible. We do the same night every night of the week, you know, kind of thing. We're not shifting schedules. We're doing Wednesday night to 7 or Tuesday night to 7 or Thursday night to 7. We're trying our best to facilitate an environment where you can get involved and meet people and build relationships. Again, not so that you can get something out of it. If you're not a Christ follower, then yes, there's something for you. But if you're a Christ follower this morning, it's not just about that. It's what you can add to the group. Think of it this way. The local church rises and falls on its relationships. Bottom line, the local church rises and falls. The local church is only as healthy as its relationships. And you know this, and I know this. In fact, if you're newer, maybe you can relate with this one, that people will come for the Sunday experience. But I'm telling you, they will stay long-term for the relationships, because of the relationships. And I know some of you right now, you're mentally, our church is on the clock. You may never put this this way, you never maybe tell me this, but we are on the clock with you. You've come, maybe you like the Sunday morning experience enough. I haven't driven you away with my voice or anything. You're okay right now, but you're kind of saying, I'm kind of waiting to see if there's relationships to be formed, because, and you don't maybe have a date or time in mind, but when that clock runs out, you know it's like, I'm out of here. Because you are, and this is the tension. We are reluctant to form new relationships, but within the church, we expect relationships, right? We expect that, and we should expect that. And so there's a tension there. And we're trying to resolve that tension. And one of the ways we do that is inviting you and putting everything together for you to come into a circle. Because here's the reality. A community void of relationships will eventually be avoided. This is why churches come and this is why churches go. There are 3,700 churches that will close its doors for the last time this year. 3,700 churches. And the reason isn't because of their theology necessarily or their doctrine. The reason is they undervalue relationships both inside and outside the church walls. I don't want to be one of those churches. I'm going to beat this drum till I die. I cannot overstate this enough. Relationships, relationships, relationships. This is why we need circle makers here. We need circle makers. We talk about disciple makers, and we will in this series, but we need circle makers. If you are saying, hey, I'm willing to join a group, I'm willing to join a circle, you have become a circle maker. We need you. I just can't sit here and say, hey, let's form a circle and nobody join. You know, kind of, that's not a circle. You, if you get involved, you are a circle maker, and we need you. In fact, you, I would say, if you're a Christ follower, even if you're not a Christ follower, I would say it in different ways, but you need a circle, and a circle needs you. And if you've had a bad life group experience here or somewhere else, my guess is It's because you were not getting what you wanted. That you approached the life group in a way of, what can I get out of the life group? What's in it for me? And I totally understand that, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't have that kind of approach, at least on some level, but I'm just saying, if you approach life groups differently this time, of not what I can get out of it, but what I can put into it, it's going to totally change your experience. I will just promise you that. You need a circle in order to fulfill the law of Christ. Love people the way I have loved you. You need a group, whether that's here in a life group, somewhere, you need a circle. And a circle desperately needs you. There are people in this room right now who need to hear your story, who need your experience, who need your advice, and they will never get it sitting in this seat. They will never hear it. They will never have it. Your best friend, I don't know, your best friend may be even sitting in here, and you'll never know unless you get in a circle with them. You need a circle. The circle needs you. And don't you want to be a part of a church that says passionately and lives this out? Relationships for us. Relationships are worth dying for. Don't you want to be a part of a church that says this and means it and lives this out? Don't you want to be a part of a church like that? I would be proud of a church that says over and over again, relationships, relationships, relationships are worth dying for. This is us. Would you pray with me? God, thanks so much. Jesus, all of this is only possible because of you. That you came, you lived, you died in our place. You took the sin of the world upon you. You removed everything that got in the way between having a relationship with us and the Father. God, you just removed everything. God, I pray, Lord, because of that love, that would motivate us to get involved in deeper and deeper in ways with people who are not like us, who are different from us, who may be a little bit more difficult than what we would choose and prefer. But because, God, we know how difficult we were for you, how complicated things were, how messy, how ugly, and you still chose to love us anyways. God, I pray that that would propel us forward and into circles, into relationships. God, if there are people who are trying to talk themselves out of a group right now, I pray that you talk them into it. There's a million reasons why we just don't have the time, don't have the energy, don't whatever. God, I pray that you would change their mind. God, make this be one of those things that we just say, this is who we are, and we're not changing. Thank you for Christ. We pray this in his precious name. Amen.